Ready, set, go!
This is the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. Tune into our weekly radio show. For more information, go to checkpointradio.com. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to the Checkpoint Radio Podcast from Westwood One. Exclusive, uncensored, and extended conversations from the nationally syndicated crew of the Checkpoint Radio Show. My name's Nate Bender. I'm joined by the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis.
What up?
Norris Howard.
Hey.
And over at the Checkpoint News Desk, Joe Sloan.
Psyched to be here.
And genuinely psyched to be here. No longer jet lagged.
Yeah.
I'm going to use air quotes for that.
Yeah, psyched to actually be here both mentally and physically.
Yeah.
100.
Not exhausted from flying back from Vegas this week. So thank you guys for downloading another episode of the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. We're going to get into the radio show review here in just a second. But before we do that, we got to start off with an iTunes review.
Yes, I missed this last week.
Because Kevin needs to hear how good we are. He never believes how good this show is. He's gonna find 17 mistakes that we didn't hear during this episode. But listen, here's what the fans think. This is from 311 DS.
All right.
311 DS, okay.
These guys do a great job at talking about multiple topics. I was worried that it would just be an esports podcast, but they cover a whole lot of interesting things, not even game-related. They do a good job of keeping it entertaining by mixing up the topics. We'll be subscribed for quite some time. Thank you very much, 311 DS.
And to his point, we couldn't do just esports.
We
rely heavily on being able to do video games and occasionally pop culture.
Well, not to mention too, you know, as industry experts, we were able to look at what was going on and be like, you know, there's been tons of esports only shows and none of them seem to have survived very long.
Well, but
let's mix
that
up the formula.
But not just that though, it's the fact that they're inextricably linked. There are trends
are.
In gaming that will trickle into esports and trends in esports that will trickle into gaming. There's no way to, in earnest, in my opinion, have a conversation about one and not include the other as a major part of that content as well.
That's why we're industry experts.
Well, I don't know that is
that's a little far.
You can't stop quoting our own press release. you know that.
Oh, that was our press release that said that.
I guarantee you it is.
I thought that was a newspaper or something.
No. I think, you know, we can.
So there is still journalistic integrity in this world. And here I thought with ESPN there wasn't.
You know, listen, we just need a third party source to be able to validate it before we claim it openly on the show. So I'm just
who can validate it? What's the qualification to be able to validate an industry expert?
You know, every time I watch the news, I ask the same questions myself.
Like if we get
every
one of
single time,
if we get one of our reviews to say they're a bunch of industry experts, does that count?
No, I don't think that does count. I think
it has to be an actual publication.
Yeah, we need a third party publication that we actually have no influence over to be able to say it. So
dang,
yeah, that's not just quoting our own press release,
man. These rules.
Just saying,
rules suck.
Yeah, rules are dumb.
I just can't put it on the scoreboard unless
they're not rules. They're more like guidelines.
Well, yeah, guidelines suck.
Journalistic guidelines. You know what? They're made to be broken.
Do you just need your ego stroked for a little bit? Like,
yeah,
you just need to.
They are not made to be broken.
We got invited out to Vegas. How much more ego stroking do you need?
Here's the
problem. I mean, it only grows.
He doesn't know if he was actually invited just because of him, or if it was a group thing. Like, oh, I guess Joe can come too.
How about this little bit of ego stroking? We are proud to announce that we are going to be on the Sports Hub of Boston. That is so
exciting. Okay, well, that's pretty amazing.
How about that?
I'll take that.
How about that? That's an exciting announcement that we can actually officially announce. What was the debut? We got a note on when the debut is. I don't have my phone on me.
I think it's the beginning of... No, DC is the beginning of April, right?
I want to say it may be somewhere in there. I just don't have the information.
It's soon.
But the Sports Hub in Boston, we are going to be featured over there. So that is hugely exciting for those that...
You said April 8th.
April 8th. Thank you.
Same station, I believe, that carries the Patriots?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so a big deal.
Not small time.
Yeah, right. Also, one of the stations where I caught one of their producers on Twitter talking trash about esports.
Ooh.
And now we're on their radio station.
Yes. We got to start giving a little bit of love to the uprising now.
I may go back and, you know, specifically quote that tweet once we debut on the Sports Hub
Could we
start a pot?
Rustle some feathers or Jimmy's, take your pick.
I think we could definitely a little rivalry with the people who work at the station,
the old sports ballers.
I'd just be curious to know that after 6 months or so, who's getting more engagement. I'd just be curious.
Not total engagement necessarily, but who's seen the most growth?
Obviously we're going to see the most growth. That's not fair at all.
Well,
we're starting at zero and working our way up.
They also have 189K followers to our 600, 700.
Yeah, you're not
wrong. Worth mentioning.
They just need to adjust for inflation.
But anyway, if you guys are from Boston in the Boston area, make sure starting April 8th that you guys check your local listings for Checkpoint Radio, where you can hear us on the good old terrestrial radio.
That's right. Again, that is starting April 8th, and we are hugely excited. Of course, maybe the rivalry we're looking to start is more friendly than anything. So, but anyway, let's talk about what was going on this week on the radio show. It's been a week, actually, since we've been able to do this. Last week was our special from the opening of the esports arena at the Luxor in Las Vegas.
Our special fatigued version of the podcast.
That's right. And by the way, it is Wednesday. So now if you missed that broadcast that was live at the Luxor, you can hear that on demand over at our website, checkpointradio.com. So if you haven't heard it yet, because I understand some affiliates didn't carry the updated version.
Aww, rude.
Not everyone got it. Some of them got the classics, the classic segments.
Yeah, not a terrible episode either.
Not bad. But if you haven't heard our special from out at the Luxor at the Allied Esports Arena at the Luxor in Vegas, then go and check that out on demand over at our website, checkpointradio.com. All right.
I don't know if it's our best episode overall. It's really good, but it's definitely some of our best interviews we've ever done.
Yes, totally agree. And I gotta give you guys credit. Your casting was pretty decent.
That was a really fun segment.
I was pleasantly surprised. I was ready. I was prepared.
You ready for a dumpster fire?
I was ready to put you guys through the ringer and beat you up by the end of that segment.
I was pleasantly surprised. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that Norris was able to. I mean, he's a big FGC guy, as is, right? So he just really kind of had to, mimic stuff that he saw. But it did surprise me that Joe was able to keep up with him and not sound like a complete idiot.
I had to switch it. Yeah, it's like immediately I was like, oh, I can't do this. So I switched on to color commentary and I was just his color man.
But I think it made sense because me and Joe have the most context for traditional sports. So he kind of, as soon as I started, he kind of understood the role. And then he kind of took, color commentary.
He's Ken Cal and Paul Woods.
Fair, that's what I've noticed, like, through OWLs. They always team up the same two casters with each other because you learn to play off each other.
That chemistry.
Yeah. Yep. That is very true.
Tasteless and Artosis, best of all time.
All right, so let's go over what we talked about this week on the radio show, starting off with talking about the Fair Play Alliance. This is the most concerted and unified effort that I think we've ever seen from the video game industry to try to combat toxic behavior. Now, we had mentioned on the segment that Sony and Microsoft have tried to, have individual efforts in the past.
People have,
but those were fairly localized and scattered across, multiple different games and multiple different platforms. Sure. And this, I think, is really interesting because it seeks to kind of present a united front. And I think if this is successful, that we'll see many more companies join the Fair Play Alliance and start enforcing these as a standard of conduct across most of gaming. And I think that's probably needed at this point.
And, especially during the MOBA boom that there was always the idea in League of Legends, let's say, if I do, I get so toxic that I get banned, whatever, I'll go play Heroes of New Earth or Dota 2, whatever, I'll go play something else, another MOBA. that's where this kind of gets interesting, because if there is a concerted effort between these companies to work together and kind of share information, well, your behavior in one game might affect you in another game.
Well, and I think, you know, more so than a guideline or a set of rules to be able to dictate what behavior is acceptable, I think that, you know, if your behavior has consequences that carry just beyond a video game to maybe, say, your Twitch account, I think people would think twice before they start to be a giant steaming pile of human garbage.
And not just that, but I look at it something akin to like a driver's license, right? If you're a horrible driver in one state, you don't have a valid driver's license. You can't go to Ohio and get another driver's license.
Right.
You can't drive anywhere. And so I think that's, you know, important just in terms of, you know, understanding the responsibility that comes with these online interactions. Because the more and more we continue to communicate online, and the more and more it's intertwined with our everyday lives, there's not going to be the quote unquote username, you know, the cloak of the username anymore. You're going to be who you are everywhere.
Yeah, see, the most powerful quote for me from the original article that I read, which came from Kotaku, is where one of the quotes mentioned that, you know, online isn't just online anymore. We're online everywhere we go. We're constantly connected, and that's become our real life. And
it's an extension of
the
real world.
You know, Nate, you mentioned a minute ago, you know, well, this, you know, that these types of actions, you know, were always accepted in some type of games, but they're not just games anymore. Online is part of our real life, and as a result, there needs to be the same type of consequences as there would be in real life.
And that's what this really speaks to for me, whereas, you know, the ESRB was a company, or was an industry reaction to Congress basically saying, figure it out or we'll figure it out for you.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, you have a problem. This feels much more proactive. This feels like the industry realizing before Congress has to tell them, like, we have a problem, and here's the thing. The ESRB may not rate online content, but that doesn't mean you're not going to be held accountable for it.
Right. And the thing is I don't know how you could possibly ignore the problem anymore.
No.
Between just...
those days are past.
Between just what you experience within seconds of loading into voice chats, between the litany of negative stories that have come out about the shit that you find on gaming platforms.
The guy in Kansas City who got killed.
Swatting in Kansas City. The open harassment that has been happening in the gaming community for years.
Yep.
Goddamn Gamergate. All of those things are scathing indictments to say, listen, we need to do a better job at enforcing some sort of standard of conduct. However, I do have some concerns about the scope of what they're wanting to enforce. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think people have to be really active in the conversation. People who have been listening to this show for a long time, or other shows that I've been a part of for the better part of 11 years, you guys know I'm a free speech activist, and there's very little that I like in terms of policing people's speech. But this is such a widespread and encounterable problem. You can encounter it right now.
Oh, dude,
into PUBG once.
Dude, my roommate, back in the day when I had a roommate and we would log in to Call of Duty, whatever Call of Duty it might have been, and we would play drinking games based off how quickly it would take for you to hear a racial slur. And there were plenty of nights where we had to stop ourselves, where we were like, no, going to make ourselves sick. That is how widespread it was. It wasn't like, oh, ha-ha, he said something crazy, take a shot. No, it was as soon as you logged in, you were, you know, based off somebody's username or based off, you know, the skin that somebody used in the game. It was always something, and it was widespread so much to a point to where there were certain games that I straight up stop playing.
And here's why I think there does need to be some level of conduct enforcement. It's because in the real world, when you walk around, your right to free speech says that you can say pretty much whatever you want.
Sure.
There's limited exceptions, but most things you can say. but you pay a social price for doing so.
Sometimes a physical price.
And sometimes a physical price if you break the norms hard enough.
And technology has facilitated being able to create a record of public note
yes.
on your conduct at any given time.
But I'm not even talking about like social justice. I'm talking about you go down. If I go downtown and I say some shit, there's going to be a consequence to it, even if it doesn't get caught on phone. There's going to be a consequence. If
sure.
If you just go, you know, to your school and you're an asshole to somebody, you can be an asshole to somebody, but there's a negative social consequence of they go, okay, you're an asshole.
Right.
Online, that doesn't exist. They might call you an asshole, but there's so much. While we are connected, we're also so disconnected when we're online and have that shield of anonymity. There really is no social price that you pay. And so what I think the Fair Play Alliance might look to do is you kind of create a substitute social consequence, because there can't just be your traditional social consequence. There has to be something that makes you go, maybe there's a price that I'll pay if I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
Well, see, I think I see where Nate's coming from. You know, you listen to some of our other shows. There are parts of it that, if taken in a certain context, people might go, "Oh, there, we have to report that to the Fair Play Alliance now, right?" But one of the things that I really respected is one of the quotes that they said, because, you know, obviously this is a very big undertaking. They said they're just getting it off the ground, but they said that honestly, basic like respect between individuals is like sort of an agreeable goal to aim for. But they go on to say, but you've got to consider what mutual respect even looks like in different cultures, in different groups. Close friends, for example, might hurl gobs of vile trash talk at each other.
Yeah,
but it's affection in a way, right?
Right.
So the fact that they're like, aware
if the four of us play a game of PUBG, we're gonna say some shit to each other.
Oh yeah,
that's just. But like, that's us.
And right. the fact though that going into it, they're aware of those types of things makes me feel a little bit more at ease.
Well, but I mean, this is the same. You know, this is sort of the same discussion that we had around the new code of conduct for Twitch, right?
Yep.
People were concerned when news first broke of that we're not going to be able to say shit or piss or fuck on our Twitch channel anymore.
Well, guess what? That didn't happen.
Yeah, that's not
right.
true.
Right.
And it's not so draconian, but this is what I'm saying. This is why we need to be tuned into the conversation
yes.
to be able to figure out what the parameters are that are being set and make sure that they're reasonable, because I do think that there's some shit that we can all kind of come together and be like, yeah, we can probably
do better than that.
Yeah, we can probably
it's understanding
avoid that shit.
It's understanding the line between trash talking someone and just being a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Epic Lurker in the chat says, sir, before we give you this $1 million a year job, we would like you to explain this audio we have from your Overwatch game. That's a lot of N-words being used.
and to be fair, yeah. That's totally real,
though.
Because I actually would respect the hell out of that, because we're looking for the context of this audio. Is there a good context to it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is there not a good context to it? Maybe we want to rethink this decision.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was our opening discussion. We also talk about the latest.
We just talked longer about it on the podcast.
I know, right? But we're able to talk a little bit more freely and say things like shit and fucking piss.
That's true.
You know, so that's an important part of the discussion, too. We also talk about the latest in esports news and OWL Stage 2 playoffs getting wrapped up. It was fascinating. I did actually watch the final matchup between the Excelsior and the Fusion, and I was really surprised, because this was a different Fusion team than I had watched at the end of Stage 1.
To be fair,
in more ways than one, to be honest.
I was going
to
say, yeah, because if you watch Stage 1, technically I feel like it was a different Fusion team every single match.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, but I think what this stage final solidified for me is that Jonak and Sabiobi are clearly probably far out and away the two best individual players in all of Overwatch League.
And how about Sabiobi? Is that how you say? How he's going to be throwing out the first pitch at a Mets game.
Yeah.
How cool is that? I mean, that really does feel very validating.
He's a charismatic kid. Like, anytime they do the little vignettes of the team, he's always kind of like in the center as like the representative, if you will, of like the team. You know, he does a lot of speaking for the team.
Right.
It's always good between he and Ark.
It's always good when you have a player on your team that can kind of be that mouthpiece, kind of be the person that
the face of the franchise.
He's the face of the franchise. And you don't have to be the best player to be the face of the franchise. You do have to be the best player if you're going to be a distraction about it.
Yeah.
But if you're just like the face of the franchise, like I've talked about it before. I loved CLG because of Double Lift for a long time because right. he was entertaining, he was funny, he understood the shortcomings of his team. CLG, by the way, was so self-aware at one point, they created a spinner wheel, which literally had, it's like, well, let's find out what's going to happen in our CLG game today. And it would be things like, you know, play well for 20 minutes and then throw it Baron. and they'd have like this whole wheel, like how they're going to screw it up. And I'm like, that is... self-aware.
Did you know back in, I think it was stage one, they actually went around to all of the practice rooms for each of the OWL teams, and they put a giant chart like on the inside of the door that says days since we've C9'd.
Yeah.
They counted it up. Speaking of Sabiel be tossing that pitch at the Mets game, though, I've really, really been loving all of the different social media stories and pictures of seeing different traditional sports organizations being accepting of the teams. And the coolest one that I've seen so far is on the LA Valiant's Facebook page. There's a picture of Silk Thread, Grim Reality, and Agilities, and they're at an LA Kings game, and they actually gifted them with their own LA Kings jerseys that had their names on the back.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. And I just really think the more you start to see that convergence between traditional sports and pop culture and sort of this acceptance of esports, I really do think that, you know, it will eventually penetrate into the larger cultural zeitgeist.
I think it already is.
I think it's on the cusp now.
It's right there on the edge, man. It's going to happen.
Yeah, you can have a conversation about esports with random people on both flights to and from Las Vegas. Robbie and I, we talked to our person that we were sharing a spot with a little bit, at least, about esports, and they at least knew the context of it.
Here's the thing. I know esports will have made it when Ninja goes on Ellen.
Aren't they lobbying for that to happen?
When Ninja goes on Ellen, this shit is over.
Am I wrong, or didn't PewDiePie make it on one of those?
We're not talking about Felix.
I'm asking though. I mean, like, if you, because really, because
like, he's a streamer,
though. Yeah, but the YouTube thing. I mean, Twitch is really just an extension of, you know, Let's Plays that started being uploaded to YouTube. So, you know, if you want to really kind of trace it back, the first breakout star, whether we really want to admit it or not, is Pewds.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So, you know, I can't remember. Did he go on Ellen?
I'm not sure. I think he may have.
He may have.
He might have.
He was on talk show. I don't know if it was Ellen.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, Ninja, out of all everybody from the streamer and esports culture right now, you know, in the next year or so, to appear on Ellen, it would be Ninja.
I don't know about Ninja because he's a little bit isolated. I want to see an esports team.
Oh, that'd be cool.
There you go.
NYSL on the Today Show?
Something like that, yeah.
Although I would like to see Conan do a Clueless Gamer with Dr. Disrespect.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God.
Send it.
Oh, my God. How is
Skuro, clip it and send it right now.
How is this not already happening?
Right?
Conan, clip it and send it.
Conan. I mean, do we know anyone who writes for Conan? Seriously?
Somebody does somewhere.
He's gotta have a big enough writing staff.
Legit. That needs to be. That would be amazing.
That'd be like six degrees of Conan's writing staff.
Speaking of Ninja, we also spent a segment talking about Ninja's Fortnite tournament that he set up through the esports arena at the Luxor in Las Vegas.
I hope this he calls it like Ninja cool. Shoot and Slam Spectacular or something like that. Just some dumb name.
That would be fun.
I wanted to have just the worst name.
But I think this is really a unique premise for a tournament.
Mm-hmm. It really is. I'm looking forward to seeing Ninja Jam 2018 because that's what I've named it.
Nice.
Ninja's 40 Nights of Fortnite.
That's right. I would really love to see this on stream because, you know, I alluded to it. I want to see the meta strategy employed by the contestants in, mm-hmm. in this particular contest. Because it's not like, you know, every man for himself and we go in and we try to win in the traditional sense. There's going to be some strategy involved because the pot will roll over if Ninja continues to win.
What right? if in the 10th round, Ninja is just like, all right, last person alive, I'll let you kill me.
No, what if Ninja says, all right, last game is double or nothing.
Man, no, there's gotta be like, I want an
so
epic
I put
backstab.
50 racks.
backstab, yes.
I want the group to decide, yeah, we're gonna let Ninja win these first like nine games.
Second
and
to
then
last
in the,
game.
Yeah, in the eighth game, someone's like, no way, man, just blows them away for $22,500.
Yep.
Like, come on, as soon as that prize pot, well, I mean, frankly, if the prize pot was at $2,500, I'd backstab all three of you for it. But like, as soon as it gets over 10 grand, there's no way that teamwork's going to hold up.
And that's the thing. There's 98 people who each of them present a variable in terms of,
I
like,
I want to see all of that
to
fall
a lot,
apart.
Exactly. Like, to a lot of people, $2,500 is enough of a motivator to make you go, eh, fuck the plan. I'm going to go into business for myself.
$2,500? Paid for your trip to Vegas.
Guys,
true.
Something else to keep in mind, too, is there's no names above people's heads. How do you even know who's who?
Oh, good
That's
point.
True.
Although,
no, you all drop into one place. You all just, okay, we all drop here. All right,
fine. Ninja drops there, too.
And just blows everyone away. Yeah, that's true. How would you know?
You wouldn't know.
Run away. Get away.
Yeah.
Everybody get... I don't know. You're right. You bring up a very interesting point.
Everyone on our team only runs north.
We only ever
go north.
Or just like everybody on our team, like, you know, no pants or something. I don't know.
In fact, I would want to see the camera of the person that shoots Ninja and then sees on their screen, you killed Ninja.
Oh, you know we'll get that shot.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. And they just, like, start freaking out because they just got $2,500 and they get dusted immediately because they're not paying attention.
Who cares? $2,500.
$2,500.
I've already won a $2,500, but you also get $2,500
for winning the match,
chicken.
Yeah.
No, it's not chicken dinner.
It's not a chicken dinner.
They wish they had something so
Victory
cool.
Royale.
Victory Royale.
Yeah. You know what they call it over in Europe?
Shut up.
No. You guys shut up. What's the answer, Robbie?
Victory Royale with cheese.
You could have not heard that. You had the opportunity.
Yeah, that's on you now, Nate.
No, I just needed everyone else to hear that.
If you've ever heard all of the oxygen leave the room in one fell swoop.
You're welcome.
By the way, does anyone else like the fact that they just used winner chicken dinner, like the oldest like craps term there's ever been?
Yeah.
That they just decided like we're going to like, I guarantee you that was someone in early alpha who just put that there for no reason and they're like, we're sticking with
that. Stick with that.
That's great.
Stick with that.
See, I wish Overwatch would have done that with the payload. It used to just be a picture of a Doge.
Why not?
Before it had like its own payload icon, it was just the Doge.
That's funny.
I like that.
You're right.
I like that.
By the way, my girlfriend has a Doge.
Overwatch. She has a Shiba Inu,
and it is impossible not to make Doge jokes when I'm over there. You can't not do it because like her like
so
it is the prototypical Shiba Inu, and like it will like if you like start playing with it, it'll like start like munching on like it's you know a toy or something like that. She's got this shark toy that has, and it'll like get like really vicious with it, and like it's impossible not to go, oh my god, such vicious, much more. You can't not do it.
Oh my god!
Oh, that's amazing.
You know, I had talked about this, when we were in the green room. But there's a couple of segments that we've basically planned
next week's show.
We planned next week's show. It's already in the done in terms of planning. But there's a couple of segments that we're going to have coming up, including a great music segment.
We have a revisit of What's in the Box coming.
But there was another one that we had, I just lost gaming memes. Gaming memes, yes, our favorite gaming memes, and I think that's going to be a really really fun discussion that we're going to have.
Oh my god, 9 minutes on the dankest gaming memes.
That's what we have to call it,
IG,
too.
Yeah. The dankest gaming memes.
No, the whole thing, 9 minutes of the dankest gaming memes.
Yes.
That's the front cell right there.
No, but we need to factor in like the in, so it's got to be like, you know, 8 minutes and 12 seconds of the dankest gaming memes.
There you go.
I love it.
It's Kevin's gonna love us.
Kevin's gonna be so mad.
Oh my god,
he's
Kevin,
gonna hate
this.
This
is gonna be the worst.
Kevin's
segment
gonna be like, "Come on, guys, we brought you guys together to talk about actual esports, not memes."
Are casual gamers even gonna know what you're talking about?
No, only casual gamers are gonna know what we're talking about.
But he's not gonna get a single one of them, and he's not gonna think any of them are funny.
Right. That's the point.
Yes.
It's
and that's
be
what makes me smile
awesome.
The most.
It's going to be awesome. I can't wait to see the show notes from that.
By the way, I love that in the early days, we were always worried about, like, man, what's the producers going to think about this? And now we're like, how can we actively piss off our producers?
Yeah.
How can we make them the most angry while not canceling our show?
I was about to say, the creativity and the constraint, like having this box we got to operate on. How can we still piss off Kevin just a little?
Right. We can't get ourselves fired, but we have to make him kind of mad.
Kevin, yeah. My foot's outside the box.
I'm not touching you.
Oh, God, yes.
To wrap up our first hour, we talked about the upcoming possibilities of a PUBG League. They've been making some staff acquisitions to, you know, that point in the direction that they could possibly be looking at launching a league. I think it would be awesome. I would love, here's the thing, I didn't get to say this during the segment, I would just love to be able to watch more consistent competitive PUBG. That would be a win in my book. But
yeah.
I think as we had identified during the conversation, that is really predicated on having a static place to be able to continually go to that hosts these types of matches, because you can't just roll into a convention center and set up, you know, what is essentially
150 plus machines.
Yeah, it's essentially a big band stage for esports. Like, it's ridiculous when you see it set up in front of you. And then you go, okay, well, how do we, you know, now we've got to have cameras that are able to pan up and down three stories worth of
a Hollywood Squares
ridiculous
style.
Yeah. It's so silly.
But that's the only way you can do it.
No, see, here's the problem about having a single place. I mean, even with the OWL, which is only going to be out in specifically LA for maybe two seasons, I think, is the last rumor that I heard. Even just knowing that they're eventually going to move to their own places, you still have people that are a little bit like, oh, yeah, it sucks, though, that they're just, like, you know, stuck there and they're not in their hometowns. I think what PUBG Corp is trying to do is, instead of creating their own league flat out again like Riot or like Blizzard is doing, you guys mentioned that every time a big organization takes on, say they want to run a PUBG tour, whether that's IEM or whether that's DreamHack, they're going to run into problems. And DreamHack could end up running into the same problems that IEM did, because being different organizations, they're not going to call and be like, hey, DreamHack, just so you know, this is one of the major hurdles that we had to, you know what
Here's
I mean?
Some tips and tricks.
Exactly, but that's what PUBG Corp can do. If they're the ones who are consistently working with their tournaments and with organizers, and they know what kind of hurdles they're going to run into, then that's the way that they go about making sure it travels.
It's just a far less portable setup than having
two
banks of six computers on either side.
They once said that about the Ringling Brothers Circus too, though. But look what they did.
Yeah, but I mean, like, we even saw how easily that was transportable when we were talking about the Fiesta Bowl down in Arizona.
Yeah. Or talking about the Big Betty.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
The mobile trucks. Yeah.
I think with the Big Betty, to be able to present a esports tournament as opposed, you know, like that has good visual shots outside of the in-game shot and the competitor's face, that's a little bit more challenging.
Yeah. Because you need an entire production vehicle for that.
Yeah, you'd need a second
vehicle.
Big Betty that had the production shit in it. So,
but I think what the good news is if the need is that there has to be a centralized location that has, you know, the PUBG setup, I think that's actually good news, because in the grand scheme of things, in the grand scheme of costs of running a league, that's not that expensive.
Yeah.
That is doable. You are going to have sponsors who are going to be into it with PUBG. You're going to have Tencent who's willing to put some money behind it, and PUBG Corp, which makes a fortune.
And I just think that's much more logical, not just from a financial sense, but also in terms of promotion. Because, Robbie, I get what you're saying about, you know, you have PUBG actually run it, and they function sort of like the circus. They go wherever, you know, from town to town with this setup, and PUBG is the one who really is ultimately responsible for the presentation. However, that is infinitely more expensive to do.
Sure. Yeah, it
than
is.
To have but, one centralized location.
But by virtue of the game, I think it's perfectly acceptable to have that centralized location because, you know, when you think of Overwatch League, it's analogous to the NFL where there's a home team and away team. You bring in the away team to play in your stadium. If the NFL worked in a different way where all the teams played together and every week, you know, okay, this week the Jacksonville Jaguars have to have all 31 other teams come into their stadium, well, that wouldn't make any sense. You would just say, well, no, we're going to pick somewhere in the middle of the country or more likely Los Angeles, plop down a big stadium there, and that's where everyone's going to play.
But for PUBG, it's so much more critical that they get the technical aspects of it locked down because there's so much of a variable way to be able to present the visual product when it comes to consuming it for the audience in terms of over Twitch or, you know, over a streaming platform.
I think
that's the biggest challenge, I think, that you run into when you don't have a centralized location.
All about the money, though, because remember when we talked to Tyler, what was the number one event that he would want that he wanted to put on at the esports arena?
PUBG.
And you know have an arena that wants it, they're going to pay you to bring it.
And when you looked at that arena, it wouldn't have looked like your traditional PUBG setup, but with all the computer banks they had lined up with the back training rooms that they had
figured it
and
out.
The things on the stage, they could do it.
Excuse me, did you not hear when he said that the seats actually go in
and you can
to
make
give more room?
You can absolutely do
that
it.
That blew my mind.
Yeah. It would be a challenge, but you could do it. Anyway, we also talk about the latest in gaming news as well as Pokemon Go getting quests. The quest to find Mew, the quest to get
maybe
more
the quest access, for lore.
More access to legendaries, access to lore, although I don't know how much really I'm interested
in the lore.
Pokemon Go 2, the search for more money.
The idea that I could...
That sounds accurate.
The idea that I could go out on a weekend, though, and potentially get some legendaries without having to deal with the people who are like, oh, you guys are in? Oh, I didn't get in. Everyone back out? Can everyone back out of the raid,
No, you're right.
Please?
You're right. No. The raid system is... when it's not broken, it is annoying because you have to deal with
people.
People in a physical space.
Yeah.
Ugh. I mean, I don't know about you, but there was some, especially after about 6 months after the raid system came out.
And here's the thing. If you had only
They're not fun people to be around. There were some of them that would show up with 7 fucking cell phones.
Yep. We had one of those dudes. Here's the thing. If you could reasonably do all the raids with 4 to 5 people, fine. But some of them flat out require like 15 to 20 people to do.
And here's the thing. And I appreciate the people who show up with that many phones because you know what? It's nice to have.
It's nice to know you're going to win.
Yeah, you're definitely going to win. But it takes everything in me to not openly mock and make fun of them.
And here's the worst one is
between battery banks and cell phone hardware, how much money have you spent?
Yeah, you get some people where it's like, you'll be like thinking like, wow, they have a ton of phones on them, and then you'll find out that they've got like their friends' phones and their family's phones, and I'm like, so you were the loser who got sent out to go do the Pokemon raid, and everyone else is just chilling back at the crib.
No, I've seen a cat with 7 of his own phones
and tablets.
Oh my god,
phones and tablets,
right? And tablets that he owns at a gym.
You're paying,
and yet you're still wearing
for 7 phones. You're paying
data service for 7
service.
Of them bitches.
Now, yeah. I mean, you could probably just do a family plan with 7 lines, but...
And yet you're still wearing the dirty-ass hoodies.
Exactly.
And
the whole point is the optics, bro. First of all, why the fuck do you have 7 phones? That's just dumb. Second of all, because you can easily recycle the old ones. But it's the simple fact that you're out there with 7 phones, which means you're doing all your usual Pokemon rigmarole 7 times.
It means you have 7 accounts leveled up, by the way.
Don't you have some other shit to do?
Think about all the raid passes you're buying. If I could afford 7 phones and tablets to also raid on, I'd be looking as fly as Norris does half the time.
Thank you.
No, you wouldn't. You don't have the fashion sense for it.
I take Norris out with me.
That's true.
Jeez.
We also talk about Smash coming to the Switch and whether or not
Smash on the Switch.
This will end up being Nintendo's opportunity, because I think we can all agree that there is an opportunity for Nintendo to enter into the esports scene.
Yeah.
And really, it only
exists around Smash.
Will Nintendo be able to handle it maturely?
If they're going to do it, now has to be when they do it, because they've held off on pulling that trigger for as long as they possibly can.
And not just now. I mean, right now, the moment that the new Smash drops, it must drop with a tournament, in my opinion, because if it is, if they miss this opportunity with the climate shifting in Japan and with, you know, the consumer base back energized on Smash, we played it on the show a couple weeks ago, the energy involved with the announcement.
Back, baby.
If they don't take advantage of this, it'll feel like beyond just a major misstep. I mean, we're talking about potentially hundreds of millions of dollars of potential dollars that they could miss out on in terms of this esports
wave. And here's the thing, is that the Melee, the Smash community, not even just sectioning it off by Melee and Smash 4 players, the Smash community has been begging Nintendo for years to do something, some kind of tournament tracking system, some kind of point system, some kind of off season, anything that would alleviate the constant need to every weekend show
travel
up somewhere for a tournament. And now it is nice because, yes, it gives you opportunities to earn every single weekend, but those points are tracked for all of the tournament. And if you miss out on that, that's like placing the lowest.
Not placing at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you guys. Which would be worse, if Nintendo doesn't do anything in this scene, because again, they're all like, no, we just want to let it be homegrown and, you know, grassroots and stuff, or if they attempt it and fail?
I'd rather see them make the attempt.
I'd rather see them fail.
Yeah. You know what? Listen here, Nintendo, if they make the attempt and fail, are we going to, you know, tear into them a bit? Yes. But will we respect them more than if they just let the opportunity go by? Yeah, definitely.
Wait, Omega Weltall on our Twitch chat says that the producer Sakurai actually hates competitive Smash. Can you actually, like, give any type of, like, source on that?
I'd love to hear that.
That seems just weird.
And first of all, the final decision isn't with him anyway.
True. No, that's
so
true.
He can hate it all he likes. I mean, it's going to be what it's going
to
be.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that the potential to, you know, make money off of it is something that I don't think that Nintendo wants to continue to ignore. We also debated the final round of our High Score Hall of Fame, and by unanimous decision, Commander Shepard is...
Lara Croft won.
No.
By unanimous decision.
I mean, if it was up to us, but it wasn't up to us.
It probably would have been.
It wasn't up to us. Part of it was up to you. You guys chose our semifinals winners by vote over at our website, checkpointradio.com. You may have chosen wrong, but...
Well, here, I look at it like this. If you were to put Lara Croft in space, she'd essentially be Commander Shepard, so...
No, she'd be cooler.
She'd be so awesome in space. Oh, my God.
Space
now
Raider.
I want space. Yeah, I want space Lara Croft now.
It'd be way cooler.
Anyway,
wouldn't that just be Metroid?
Of course, we kind of that is true. And of course, we wrap up today talking, of course, about our social media question, which we put out to you. If you could have one power from a video game
or item,
one item from a video game, what would it be?
Anyone who chose Portal Gun, you're dumb.
Fascinating responses
dangerous.
There.
For as bad as you guys did voting on the High Score Hall of Fame, you did equally as good responding to that social media question, because that was really one of our better social media responses. And we already have a social media like for next week, don't we? Didn't
no,
you
because,
did one on Monday, right?
No, because this one didn't have much play.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, that's too bad. Anyway, all right. So let's discuss our podcast topic. Norris, you brought this one to our attention, so I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, so essentially this was written in a blog called The Undefeated, which is, you know, it's a culture and sports blog. But it was written by LaToya Peterson, and it basically touched on a racial gap in esports, essentially breaking down the fact that team-based esports, your League of Legends, your Overwatches, your Dota 2s, are the esports with the highest prize pots, also PC-based, really don't have the representation from African-American players as the FGC does, which are console-based and more individual-based and also have significantly smaller prize pools. Mm. As I was reading through this, I couldn't help but really appreciate a lot of the connections that she was making as this went along. One of the major points is, of course, the economic separation, is the fact that PCs are expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Consoles are not. And therefore, most people who have the opportunity to go into a professional esports situation are going to do it on the console pretty much that they grew up with, or the gaming device that they grew up with. And I really found it, you know, fascinating. And I wanted to get you guys' sort of reactions to it, because Robbie, you and I are both heavy connoisseurs of Overwatch.
Uh-huh.
And according to the research here done by ESPN Fan Network, the consumers of esports fall almost exactly on population lines, you know, about 50% of 50% of the fans are white, and about 19% of the fans are black, and about 23% of the fans are Hispanic. So that pretty much
falls in line with population.
Falls in line with U.S. population.
Sure.
But the representation in these esports is simply not there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to get you guys' reaction, because it, not just to say, you know, how do you feel, but also, where do you think we go from here? Because me, as an African American, it's a little weird to see the only black guy in the Overwatch Stadium is like
Malik,
the hype man.
Well, I was actually just looking for him, because I know there is at least one other player. I thought he was on Valiant, but he's not, apparently, and I can't actually find where he was. But that also kind of speaks to the problem.
Yeah,
that if there is one other guy, we don't even know where he's at.
Yeah, when I think of League of Legends, there's Afro Moo.
That's it.
And That might be it.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone else.
No. The thing is, though, is that, I mean, to be fair, if you want to talk about representation, there is a disproportionate representation of Asians.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not that we're talking about, you know, this is a lily white problem, but
right.
There, you know, and I think a lot of that does have to do with skill and, you know, Korean and Chinese teams have been cultivated on a professional big money level for far longer than right. esports has really even penetrated into the consciousness of North Americans. So I think that there is a reason that there is an underlying reason for that kind of disparity.
Well, and see, I like the word that you used, Norris, when you brought this up, is that the facts being presented are interesting, right? Because there is actually reasons, like you said, why they tend to dominate in certain places. You know, you grew up really hard on FGC stuff, right?
Super hard.
Yeah, playing, you
but
know.
But that was mostly because that's what everybody played. If you grew up in the black community, your major competitive video games were, you know, Madden and Live. This was even before 2K was
that's
out.
Also sort
Madden
of,
and Live and fighting
that's
games.
That's also sort of a thing that we found out. It can also be traced back to even, like, cultural significance, too. When we talked to Leon of the ELC Gaming, the European Division for Allied Esports, you know, he mentioned that when you're doing something in America, right, fighting games like FGC is a lot bigger here because of, like, arcades and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was never that big over in Europe, where you have team-based sports like CSGO, which is a lot more popular.
100%. And also, you know, just dealing with the entire, like, PC and console divide, because, like, even I looked at myself to a certain extent and saying, you know, you guys know I'm a staunch console gamer.
Yeah, we've been trying to get you to abandon console Overwatch forever.
I love console gaming. I've had PCs, you know, throughout life that are strong enough to be considered, I don't want to say gaming rigs, but I can play pretty much what I wanted. But it never felt as comfortable as a console did, regardless of whatever the graphical limitations might have been.
Well, I think you made an interesting point earlier, and I know the article did too, about, you know, it's what games did you grow up playing? And, you know, games like League of Legends and Overwatch, or not Overwatch, but a lot of these team-based games, CSGO, they're PC only. But when I think of one community where that disparity is lesser, it's Call of Duty.
Totally.
Where there are a lot more black players, but Call of Duty was also very pertinent on console.
That is also true. Also, access to high-speed internet is also a big factor here as well.
Yeah.
You know, because there are a lot of rural areas that are only just, you know, within the last 5 years getting access to high-speed internet. And that is, as we all know, a very critical component in being able to play online. MOBAs, in a lot of ways, are born out of a lot of RTS mechanics and MMO mechanics. It's kind of a meshing of those two things. And then, you know, you've got first-person shooters that were, you know, played over networks, LANs for a long time because you couldn't get, you know, that connection speed fast enough outside of a LAN environment.
And I mean, growing
and
up...
Now, and so it's a huge, like, that's, I think, a huge bit of consideration that we have to at least, you know, put into play here or mention that, you know, could be a big factor.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it. I used to play a lot more fighting games before I had internet because I didn't get internet very early on in life. Right. I was in my teens before we had internet regularly. And before that, the most fun games to play were the games you could play with your friends,
that's
which were console games, like, you know, Mortal Kombat was probably my big, GoldenEye, Halo in the early days. But then once I did get internet, I only gamed on PC after that. I basically completely phased out of console after that.
Right.
You know, and a lot, again, a lot of that goes back to MMOs. MMOs were, I think, really, I mean, MMOs and shooters in very different ways really kind of but carved the path for other games to figure out how that network connectivity works. And, you know, we're also something that's worth mentioning is that we are the generation that grew up with that, you know, that technology being formed, right? Like, kids,
we remember the world pre-internet.
Yeah. Right, yeah, exactly. Like, not every computer that I've ever owned in my life could connect to the internet, right? Like, I remember having to buy an external 56K dial-up modem.
Oh, 56K.
An external 56K modem. Like, think about that for
a
second.
And these things, you know, they weren't cheap back in the day.
Oh, no.
So, you know what I mean? If you came from a family that necessarily didn't have a lot of disposable income, yeah, you and all your buddies were not making, you know, a 10 tower LAN party. You weren't, you didn't, you couldn't. It's beyond that you didn't, you couldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, but what you did maybe get is a 4 Xbox Halo LAN party.
You sure did.
Console gaming once again. And again, when you look at another scene where there's plenty of, you know, black representation, competitive Halo.
You know,
that's true.
There's so many different facets that come to this. There's an article that recently came out about some of the stuff that Gaguri's been going through since she got to the United States. And
She's here now.
She is here now. Yeah, yep. She is here now. And it's interesting because in the article, they talk to someone who talks about how investors react to women in professional gaming and said that in 9 times out of 10, if you put 2 women in front of an investor and one of them looks really good, maybe has medium skills, the other one has amazing skills but not the greatest looks, they're going to go with the one
that's marketing.
Who looks better.
Yeah, that's 100%. 100%. 100%.
It sounds awful,
it
but
does.
It is
it
what
it is.
That at-a-glance appeal, because that at-a-glance appeal can actually be far more lucrative the organization down the road in terms of sponsorships, in terms of spokesmanships, than even winning tournaments.
Now, here was something that she alluded to in the article that I thought was absolutely hilarious, and yet again, it made perfect sense. Is that as PC gaming grew, and we just talked about this on the show, is that toxicity also grew as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the anonymity of having these, you know, usernames that go off into nothing and are connected to no one. And that could be off-putting at a certain point to video game players of color. And
I can't even imagine.
I've experienced it in LGBT gamers as well. And that was something that I personally experienced that, it did make me look sideways at certain PC games, without a doubt. However, the fighting games can be the best way to play it because of latency, as we were just talking about.
Arcades,
or straight up just playing on the same console, on the same TV.
In person. No anonymity. Yeah.
It is really hard to be a racist dick to somebody to their face.
Very dangerous, huh?
Because then you gotta watch out that he might just decide he doesn't want to win, and he'll just beat you with
his goals. Suddenly the fighting, it isn't just fighting in the game.
Yeah.
Right, 100%. And so I also think because of the simple confrontational nature of the FGC and fighting games in general, in a way, it made it more palatable for game players of color to kind of attached to that. You know what I mean? Because it didn't have the anonymity. The only thing we had was our skill. I had to play you, you had to play me, and there was nothing else there. And I think that was really, really fundamental as to one of the big differences beyond the economics, starting to get sort of more into the cultural fabric. And, you know, as this, you know, esports thing grows, of course do I want to see, you know, more Black and Latino and LGBT kids involved in esports, and especially the big team esports, for sure. But I think instead of trying to always make, you know, diversity fit in places, I think let's elevate what people are already doing. You know, the fact that the pots for Street Fighter V tournaments are is what a fraction of what you could get in League of Legends or Dota 2.
Dota 2 is not a fair comparison.
Not even Dota 2.
not a fair comparison.
But League of Legends or even the Overwatch League.
Sure,
I do think that that's kind of a really fucked up disparity, considering the amount of resources that go into all of these games.
And you know, we just got to meet the other day Sonic Fox in
meet is a strong word.
We said what up,
he walked by and we're like, Sonic Fox.
I met him. I shook his hand and talked to him.
Thanks for letting us know.
As Sonic Fox.
Yeah, it was when I was on my way back. But he was on his way out. I just shook his hand and said hi and talked to him for a moment. He is, like Norris, you said, he's grotesquely difficult to hate.
Yeah.
He's so nice. And I mean, you talk, you know, he's Black, he's LGBT, and it's just, this is a community that embraced him, and now that he, you know, he defends vigorously.
I mean, dude, just think about if Sonic Fox was not a CSGO player, but just a Counter-Strike player back in the day, right? Or think of if Sonic Fox,
they'd have eaten him alive.
Exactly. Think if Sonic Fox was heavy in Call of Duty 4 or Modern Warfare 1.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hard. Modern Warfare 2.
It would have been tough.
It had been incredibly tough for
them. It is the same thing that we talk about when we, you know, talk about, you know, women in gaming and absolute garbage they have to go through just to play a game. I mean, how many girls have we talked to that use voice filters or just don't even engage in voice chat because they just don't want to put up with that
crap? God forbid if you're an attractive woman that actually has talent at a video game, you are talked down to constantly.
Or you might just like them. You don't even have to have talent at games. You can just have a healthy gaming appetite.
We were just watching Pansy stream PUBG.
Yeah.
She is a competent player, an amazing caster, and still some of the garbage you see. And to be fair, her Twitch chat is mostly pretty positive with a lot of people who are big fans. But there's still a lot of garbage and a lot of creeps in that chat.
The first thing that Gaguri tweeted when she got to America was an apology on Twitter over how she looks because she's been like stressed out and binge eating or something like that.
Like
the
absurd
fact that she felt like that she had to apologize for that is
Korea's
so
got a
ridiculous
lot of weird body politics
that,
too, though.
Yeah,
so that might be a cultural thing. You think?
No, I mean, but it's a double whammy. Maybe. You're going from Korea to the state, like, and you're this high profile player. It's like
it's gonna be weird.
It's definitely gonna be weird.
I'm gonna be interested.
She's trying to get obese here. She might just be trying to fit in.
It's gonna be interesting to see how Gaguri ends up evolving as a competitor, and you know, with the spotlight on her and everything. This is gonna be kind of a test of esports audiences and fans of whether or not we're gonna be able to keep our shit in check.
And with Gaguri joining,
too many times we haven't been able to. Can we just get a win on this one? Can we just not?
If anybody wants to shit talk Gaguri, I will fight you.
Can we just not be gigantic scum shitbags on this one, please?
Just one time.
Be cool just one time.
By the way, with her joining in Stage 3 is must-watch TV.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it is must-see TV, right?
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. I hope we have like a Billie Jean King moment where like she just did her first game, whoever they, I don't even know who they play. Who's their first game?
Dallas.
Yes! She comes in and thrashes them.
I hope that first match, like that, you know how they'll do the side by side comparisons. And a few times where like it's been a really fast turnaround, they're like, the other team, by the way, had like one kill and like 30 deaths. That's what I
want to
see.
I just want people in the arena to go, oh.
Look, I love Mickey.
That'd be great.
I love him so much. But honestly, I want them to beat Dallas so bad, even Mickey loses his hype.
Yes. I want Mickey to just be like, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
He's like, I'm going to go sit with XQC.
Day one of stage three is going to be interesting television, guys. I hope you're going to be tuned in because I know that we are going to be. All right, that's going to be it for the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today for the Checkpoint podcast. CheckpointRadio.com is where you can find out more info about the show, as well as full episodes on demand posted every Tuesday, interviews from past shows, and much more. That's all over at CheckpointRadio.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. That's CheckPT Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review, like 311DS did. Shout out to you. Thank you so much for that. Checkpoint Radio is a production of Westwood One. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Big thanks to our producers, Rick Scott, Kevin Graham, and Christine Corpus. For the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, I'm Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, tune into our weekly radio show. For more information and the latest on esports and gaming, go to CheckpointRadio.com.